Hi there, folks. Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand. With me on the show, I have John Haller in Ohio. It's been a while since we've had you on the show, John. It's been quite a while, longer than normal. So it's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Tony. Been a little busy, but, you know, that's life.
Yeah, well, you've just returned from Israel, so I'm sure that you've got stuff we can discuss a little bit on that. I see the whole... Well, it's a can of worms as soon as you start talking about Israel, and I know that's going to happen. You know, it's always... People are either one way or the other when it comes to this issue. There's very few people that are somewhere balanced with it, I feel. But anyway, you're safe and sound back in the US, and it must have been a very adventurous trip because of the time that you were there and so much went down.
Yeah, we were there when we were there during Sukkot. We flew in on Sukkot, which meant that the traffic in from Ben Gurion Airport to our hotel in Jerusalem was it was wonderful because there was virtually nobody on the road. So that was great. And then we were there during the Sukkot holidays, and it seemed like they have a Shabbat every other day. And then we were also there the day the hostages were released. That evening started Simchat Torah on their calendar, which was the actual 2-year anniversary of the attack on October 7th. But we were down at Nova Music Festival. We went down to the Gaza Envelope the first full day we were there, which was the day after, it was on October 8th, but it was the day everybody was doing their anniversary celebrations because the day before had been the Sukkot Shabbat. And I have to tell you that one of the things I really wanted to do on the tour was do things that are a little bit differently, go to some sites that most Christian tours don't go to. And that's not to criticize the other tours. It's just that there were some things that I've done in the past that I thought would be helpful for people to experience for themselves. And then we also wanted to meet with people. So the first day we were there, we had a 2-hour tour of Far Aza, which was one of the kibbutzim just south of Sederot on the Gaza border that was attacked on October 7th. There were 920 people that lived there on October 7th, 2023. They're now 15. A lot of damage to the buildings that have not been repaired. We had one of the residents of the kibbutz take us around. And there was a reason, I kind of give you the contrast. There was a reason why those kibbutzim were attacked. Those kibbutzim, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but I kind of try to use one term to describe people. Those are essentially the left-leaning hippies of Israel. The kibbutzim are communal. There are agricultural communities. They live. They share everything. Sometimes they even have the kids live in a dormitory rather than in the home. They have school. You know, they have everything: rec center, tennis courts, basketball courts, that type of thing. And so this kibbutz, the fence along the west side of the kibbutz was this was Far Aza, K-F-A-R Aza. They had 68 people killed there on October 7th, 2023, 18 people taken hostage. And at the time we were there with a tour with one of the residents, there were two men still held hostage. Now, they've since been released. So we were there during the hostages release, and there were people celebrating on all sides of the political spectrum all over Israel. Everybody was glad that the hostages got released. But, and then we went to the Nova music site. That was the day of their main memorial. And there were thousands of people, but you walk through this field where looking towards where the stage was the day of that music festival. And there are 350 markers, posters set up, and then memorials and picture books, and the families were there, and you could talk to the families. It's very emotional to go through. You go to some of the bomb shelters where 20 or 24 people were killed. And when you see it up close and like that, you kind of get a different situation of the reality. And then after leaving Nova, we went to the auto junkyard or whatever you want to call it, where a lot of the terrorist cars and cars of people along the highways. I mean, we're driving on the highways where you see the videos of people being shot, pulled over, RPGs fired at the cars. One of the couples that went with us that day was it was an Orthodox Jewish couple, and their son served on the border fence that day, combat medic. When the attack started, I don't remember the exact sequence. At one point, he went and got his commander in an armored vehicle. And as they were driving, the commander, at least that was described to me, got his arm shot off, and he had to help, you know, try to stop the bleeding. Went to his base down there. And when we think of a base, we think of, at least in America, we think of thousands of people. The bases down there might have 20, 25, 30, 40 people. He had a base of about 40 people, and he got there and they were all dead. Then we went up to Sederot to the cemetery and met with the widow of the first police officer killed in the attack that morning. She said he kissed me goodbye at 7:02 a.m. And he knew something was wrong. He couldn't sleep all night long. He just said felt like something was not right. And he got up and he kissed her goodbye at 7:02 a.m. And at 7:04 a.m., he pulled into the police station in Sederot and was shot dead by Hamas terrorists. And she said that they came back repeatedly during the day before his body could be retrieved. And they had to essentially mount an attack on the police station once they were sure nobody was in it. And they destroyed the police station in the attack. So there's a memorial there. We went over to the memorial, but she said that they came back and continually shot his body all day long. There was a, and as we're in Sederot, you could hear, I mean, you're like a Sederot fence, you're maybe a kilometer from the Gaza fence that was breached on October 7th. And you could hear, this was before the ceasefire and everything. And there were a number of very large explosions just across that you could hear all day long, and aircraft and that sort of thing, as they were kind of cleaning up some of the terrorist infrastructure there. And the interesting thing is, when this happens in Sederot, people don't even look. You know, they don't even blink when these, you can kind of feel the concussion from some of the explosions, even though it's a couple miles away. And nobody, they just act like it's normal. It's kind of strange.
It's pretty surreal, I imagine.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you can see a lot of the damage from where we were, and then there's a lookout on the top of the hill. There's a place you can climb up and look into Gaza from up there. And I mean, you can see that it's been effectively destroyed. That we were in the north end of the strip near Gaza City.
But, it's pretty not amazing, I suppose. It's to be expected, but yeah, when you the Israeli troops and that pull back, and then you have Hamas, you know, still executing other people that don't go along with their ideology in Gaza and all that. And I look at it and think, and they're supposed to disarm these people and get some sort of a coherent Palestinian government in there. It's like really hard to see how that's going to happen. But
I watched the interview with Jared Kushner, who is really, I think, the architect of what's at least best as I can determine, the architect of what's going on. And, you know, I have major problems with the Trump administration, Trump's business interests, although he's technically not involved in that. The Trump company has got a multi-billion dollar resort deal with Qatar, which is pure Muslim Brotherhood. They fund terrorism. They fund...
Trump's given Qatar a part of an airbase in the U.S. It's just like, my goodness, you know, that's like... If it had been Biden or Obama that had done that, everyone would have been crying out, but people are just seeming to accept it in the conservative, whatever you want to call them, MAGA circles and all that, and it's just like...
Yeah.
It's bizarre. But you mentioned Jared Kushner. I mean, to me, he's a really shady character.
I saw the interview on 60 Minutes the other night with Leslie Stahl interviewing Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff. Witkoff himself was bailed out by Qatar. A Qatari investment fund bailed out Jared Kushner on one of his a pretty expensive office building in Manhattan. Used to be 666 Fifth Avenue. I think they've changed the number since due to the fact that they read about it in the some of the conspiracy theories on X and other sites. So they got these massive bailouts. And I'll be honest with you. Look, I'm going to be honest and upfront. I'm largely a supporter of Israel. I don't agree with everything the Israeli government does. I think they made big mistakes in thinking that they could somehow manage Hamas over the last few years, that if they allowed prosperity to come to the middle, to Gaza, that they would abandon their terrorism leanings. And that's just not true. Tony, it's so interesting as you travel around Israel. The one thing that I saw was a constant, consistent theme. We went from the Gaza envelope the next day. We went down to Hebron to the Tomb of the Patriarchs. And it was a feast day. Excuse me one second here. I'm going to put this on mute for a second. It was a big feast day. They're expecting 40,000 Orthodox Jews there. And the Tomb of the Patriarchs, usually it has a synagogue and a mosque on top. But 20 days a year, 10 days for the Jewish people and 10 days for Muslims, they have complete control of the top of the mosque. So we were there on a day when the Jewish people and worshipers had the mosque and the synagogue. Which is kind of unusual because it's, like I said, it's only 10 days per year. And there were 40,000 Orthodox Jews expected that day. And then from there, we walked down the street, been closed down now for probably 25 years or more, where it used to be full of Arab shops. There's a Jewish community at the end of the street and a place called the Hadassah House. You go to the Hadassah House, and in there, there's a memorial to the Hebron. It's actually one of the places where people were killed in the famous Hebron massacre in 1929. And it's interesting that the trigger for the October 7th attacks in 2023 and the Hebron massacre in 1929 were the same, which was claims started by Hamas in 2023 and the Mufti in Jerusalem in 1929. That the Jews were going to come and destroy Al-Aqsa Mosque. They weren't. They haven't, even though they controlled the Temple Mount for a period of time after the Six-Day War in 1967. But the theme was the same. You know, 68 people killed then, 1,200 people killed on October 7th. And then we went to Gush Etzion, which is a Jewish community on land they bought in Judea, often called the southern part of the West Bank, Gush Etzion and Efrat, and they're building 7,000 homes in Efrat. It's on land that they bought and they've owned for a while. But you go to Gush Etzion and there's a video there about the 1948 war, and it shows what happened. It's a very moving video about how many of them were killed, I think 150 some. In the 1948 war, and then go up to Jerusalem to the Herva Synagogue, and there's a video about how the Jordanians completely destroyed the Jewish quarter in 1948. And so the Jewish quarter is very new construction for the most part in Jerusalem because it was destroyed in 1948 by the Jordanians. They didn't destroy the Christian Christian or Armenian quarters of the city. But they did destroy the Jewish quarter, killed a bunch of people, families, and so there's this consistent theme everywhere you go. Now I know people will say the same thing here, but when you're in Efrat, for example, I mentioned to you before we started recording, when we went to Shabbat service at the one of the Orthodox synagogues there. And they were worshiping and singing and dancing as they do. It's called the Happy Synagogue by people that live there. But I'm sitting in my seat and a guy came and sat down on either side of me with an automatic rifle, like an AK-47 or a Kalashnikov or whatever. I'm not an expert on those type of guns. And then almost everybody had a gun on their hip. Met with a member of the Knesset. He had a gun on his hip from Efrat. Met with the mayor of Efrat. So because you go to their homes and across the valley, there's a historical site called Solomon's Pools that held water that came from Hebron and then went on to Jerusalem for the temple. On the Temple Mount, there's giant cisterns there that they filled up with that water. But, you know, the guys in Efrat are showing me bullet marks on the front of their houses from Bethlehem across the way. So you sit there and you talk to people and meet with them, and you quickly become convinced that they're, who knows what the resolution is. We went to a historical site up in Samaria, which is north of Ramallah, a place called Joshua's Altar near Bethel and Nablus, where ancient biblical Shechem is located. And by the way, there's no doubt that this is Bethel. There's no doubt that that's Shechem. And we had to get on a bus with bulletproof. We went with a couple Orthodox Jewish groups to share costs. We had to get a bulletproof bus and have an IDF escort into Joshua's Altar and go in a back road and then hike probably a good mile or so to the site of Joshua's Altar. And it is Joshua's Altar. There's no doubt about it. But I mean, so the area, the biblical heartland of Israel, Jewish people are largely excluded from unless they take extraordinary measures to get there.
Interesting. Well, we know that, yeah, this whole area is going to be the, well, ground zero for end times events. You know, that's pretty obvious from scripture. And I'm looking at the whole Abraham Accords thing and the, you know, the three faith houses in Abu Dhabi, you know, the Muslim and Christian and a Jewish synagogue and all that, and then just the moves I'm seeing everywhere with uniting religions and within Christianity and sects and so on. How do you have any thoughts on how you think this is playing out? Because I really see us moving towards the beast system, and which I think will ultimately probably be centered in Jerusalem, but we have the one world religion, I think, being, well, that's their attempts to bring it all together at this point. And the Middle East, I guess, is going to be central to it.
It's really, certainly I think the Middle East is going to be the epicenter, as some authors have said, and I think I agree with that. And you can kind of see it all coming together. You see very clear division in Israel between Arab Muslim and the Jewish government. But you also see, it's kind of interesting, within Israel proper, you know, there are a couple million, what we call, think of as the nation of Israel, excluding the West Bank or biblical Judea and Samaria. That area is, you know, it's a mix of Arab and Jewish, and the Arabs are very much in that area, are very much supportive of Israel. But when you get into Judea and Samaria and the communities there, I mean, look at it this way: Efrat, everybody carries a gun. All the men carry guns. I mean, we met, I don't know how many people we met with, everybody, pretty much everybody had a gun, either an automatic rifle or something on their hip, you know, a hand weapon on their hip. And the reason is, at Gaza, they had somewhat of a border fence. There were parts of it that had been more fortified than others. And I think they had plenty of warnings that something was coming, but nobody, it's very strange. It's almost like there's this normalcy bias. Well, things really aren't as bad as we think. And this happens all the time with governments. It happened to us, you know, 24 years ago. It happened in Israel. It's happened a number of times in Israel. And but in the area of the West Bank, you know, the Judean Samaria, like where Ramallah, Nablus, Jenin, a bunch of Arab villages, Bethlehem, they support Hamas. Like 80% of the people support what Hamas did on October 7th. And when there's no really, there's a fence, but it's easily breached. It's not really a wall in most places. It's a fence. And so now you know why people in Israel saw what happened at Gaza. And that's why they carry weapons in these Orthodox Zionist communities located in Judea and Samaria. Because there's nothing between their, I don't know how to say this, their enemy and them. And there are attacks all the time. I mean, like I showed that I talked to a Jewish lawyer down in Ephrat. He said, come, I want to show you the front of my house. And it's a complete, the UN is, well, we know this. We can agree on this. The UN is a very evil organization.
Yeah.
Through UN NGOs and everything, when you go into like, I was in Nablus, where ancient biblical Shechem is, and then on Mount Ebal, where Joshua's altar is, there's this Arab city, and it is a terrorist hotbed. But between when I was there 8 years ago and today, the number of new apartment buildings in Arab villages and places like Nablus and Bethlehem and other Arab villages, cities, and towns within the area known as the West Bank is absolutely shocking. So when you go to Ephrat, across this valley where Solomon's Pools are, this is the southern part of Bethlehem with all these new apartment buildings. So we went to Shabbat at a rabbi's home, and we came out, walked down to our bus, and looked across that valley. The first one I did was I looked at Ephrat, the Jewish community of Ephrat. There are lights in all the windows. It's like, you know, apartment buildings and condos. Across the valley, all of those new buildings, Tony, and I saw this everywhere we went. Nablus, coming down Highway 60 at night from Shiloh, from past Ramallah. In all of those new apartment buildings, there's not a single light in any window. They're completely, and ask people in Israel, they're empty. They're built, it's like a movie set. They're built for show, to make people think there are more Palestinians than there are and that their population is growing. And that's just not the case. I've been to other places where there are a community of mansions that looks like Beverly Hills, Arab. And I'm there 3-4 hours, not a single soul to be found. Mm-hmm. It's like Beverly Hills. And so there is a massive propaganda war underway. And I'm concerned, and again, I'll admit, I'm largely a supporter of Israel, but I am shocked. I mean, my X feed is an absolute sewer of Jew hatred every day. It's unbelievable, and it's infecting the conservative religious right wing in America on an epic scale. But I think this is prophetic. I think this is what was described in scripture. And I think we see it happening in front of us. But people in Israel, the Jewish populations, are pretty optimistic. It's not that and by the way, I don't want anybody to think I think the Jews are perfect. There's some bad eggs in that group too. There's some left-wing nuts in Israel, plenty of them. But as a general rule, I would say the Israeli society is 85% or a little bit more supportive of what's been done in Gaza.
So what
a lot
would
of people be shocked to hear that.
Yeah, what would you? I mean, as a Christian in Israel, how do you feel? How are you treated by the Orthodox Jews? And I mean, there'd be a lot of people listening that would go, "Well, they're just as unsaved as a Muslim." And or whatever, and I'm, you know, and without Christ, they're as lost as anyone else. But how, you know, traditionally.
Okay, so here's the issue, Tony. This is the issue with me. We know there's a promise. We know there's this reconciliation coming. Paul talks about it in Romans chapter 11. And anybody that denies that does not know their scripture. They're not perfect. They're not saved yet. I get that. But what I'm seeing, having been there a number of times, and I'm going back in 9 days for 10 days, I'm seeing how does this reconciliation come about? And there's a progression. There's a restoration of the things that they lost in 70 AD. They're tied to the land. Some of their worship. They're going to get a temple. And everybody says, oh, the temple will be the temple of the Antichrist. No, it's not built to be it will be taken over by the Antichrist. But it's not, you know, everybody says, well, the temple will be desecrated by the Antichrist. Well, how do you desecrate something that's already evil and not set aside? So there's a restoration process that happens. I'm not sure how it works. I think I see the beginnings of it. And as you go through the old city and the city of David, you see these historical archaeological sites restoring their connection to the land. Ezekiel 36, I'm going to bring you back into the land at the end. That's a future prophecy that we see a lot of these things unfolding in front of us. I'm walking through the old city the other day near the memorial site where bodies are buried from the 48 war. On the wall is a verse from Zechariah chapter 8. There were IDF soldier groups there being, you know, part of their training is they visit history of what's happened there. I looked over at the plaque on it, and so in the square, there are older people walking around, they're sitting there. There are kids playing soccer in the square in the old city, right? You know, not too far from the Western Wall. And the verse is from Zechariah. It says that old people, old men and women will occupy the area, that children, boys and girls will play in the streets. So I'm watching this, and the soldiers, a couple Orthodox soldiers, are standing at the wall reading that verse from Zechariah and weeping openly. So what I'm saying is that I think that there is a process to this. And I think it's very, first of all, Paul tells us in Romans 11, don't you wild olive branches be arrogant towards the natural. And what will happen will be a miraculous thing coming about. And so I don't know exactly how it happens. I'm just saying is I see the beginnings of it everywhere I look. And the Arabs are, by the way, every Arab in Israel is free to participate in this. But you go to Bethlehem. Bethlehem was 90% Christian 50 years ago. It's now 10 to 15% Christian. That area is not occupied. It's sort of under the umbrella of Israel. But it's Muslim persecution that's driving the Christians out. And it's about time Christians in America, in the UK, in Australia, and elsewhere wake up to the fact that we have a massive problem. And I personally believe Israel is on the front lines. You can say they're causing it, they're provoking it. And I would argue with you, you don't know what you're talking about. I've been there, I've seen it, I've lived it, I've been in Orthodox homes. I went to an Orthodox synagogue in one of the most Orthodox, hardcore Zionist communities. I was welcomed. I'm not treated badly or anything like that. Yeah. Are there some wacky settlers that spit on Christians every now and then? Yeah. I kind of just share one more story. I ran into a lady in the old city. I was talking to somebody about geopolitics in the Christian quarter. And she stopped by and she said, I'm interested in what you guys are talking about. Can I listen? And I asked her who she was. And she said, I live in Bethlehem. I work with Palestinians. And when I came here 6 years ago, I was the most pro-Palestinian person you've ever met. I have debt, but I'm Christian. I have death threats on my life. And you know, but I'm staying there, but it's a terrible place with the way I'm treated. And she said, you know, you have no idea what it's like. And so I guess I'm just saying is we want to just ignore people like this, like, well, because we don't like Jews or something like that. And I have a problem with it. I'm sorry. I don't think Jews are perfect. I don't think Jews are automatically saved. I don't think a lot of people that populate our Christian churches are saved yet either. So everybody needs to be evangelized, but there's this progression of things that happen in the end times that I see unfolding everywhere I look. And I'll be honest with you, I talk to people in Israel, nobody has an idea what the solution is. But this Islamic thing is a very big deal. It's coming everywhere. Talk to people in the UK. I was just in Texas for a conference a month ago and met with people in Texas that are shocked at what's going on with Islam in Texas and how it's coming in. That's Texas. Why Texas? Because Texas is a place, it's being done by design. And we need to realize that. And I think we're in for this epic battle in the end times. And I don't know.
The answer is not to give Qatar an airbase within the US, is it?
Well, no, and it's not to give Qatar a lot of money or credit for what they did. It's a total fake out job. And I watched Kushner and Witkoff on 60 Minutes the other day. And I have to tell you, it's shocking. So, yeah, Israel tried to take out some Hamas leaders in Qatar, okay? Because you got to cut off the head of the state. And they, you know, Trump was upset and Kushner was upset. And Witkoff says, oh, well, they took out the peacemakers. Steve Witkoff is a complete uninformed, the nice thing I will say is completely uninformed about what's going on. If he thinks that the Hamas leadership in Qatar were the peacemakers, that is a complete inversion of reality. And that's what I saw a lot of places, even among people in Israel. And I see it online all the time. Every reality is inverted all the time. I think that's a sign of the times in which we live. How this works out, I don't know. You know, I'm getting older. I may not live to see the end of it, but I will tell you that I'm very troubled by what I see with a lot of people that don't really, they either don't have a clue or they're, you hope that they're being paid to do what they do. And if they're not being paid what to do, then they're pure evil or really, really uninformed and stupid, I guess is the best way to say it. It's shocking to me. It really is shocking to me. And I mean, I even see people say, well, you know, Hamas is executing people since the ceasefire in Gaza, but they're just killing the people that were preventing them from finishing off Israel. It's a complete inversion of reality everywhere that I look. And I know people get upset about this, but, you know, I've spent a lot of time studying it. And by the way, don't get paid anything by Israel to support Israel by and large. I know people get paid by Qatar to support them. Big difference. So I think we're rocketing to a conclusion. And by the way, everywhere I looked, Tony, Orthodox communities, and even in some of the Arab Muslim communities and things I've been reading, everybody thinks that we've got like 4 or 5 more years before things really hit the fan. Something big happens. Orthodox Jews say this. Christians say this. The UN says it. The AI people say it. So maybe everybody's right on that point. And that we do have a relatively short period of time.
Yes. Well, definitely things are rocketing forward in a whole lot of areas, you know, as escalating towards the end times. And I know you've said before that things will converge very quickly, and I see that happening everywhere. But there are a ton of other topics, but I guess we'll have to leave it.
Yeah. So I'll be back from Israel, you know, about the 10th of November or so, and we can talk again after that. But, you know, I've been doing these technology roundtables with what's going on with AI and those type of things. And I will tell you that a lot of people are sending me things. There's a lot of people thinking through these issues. I don't know that any of us has it all figured out, like A, B, C, D, E, F are going to happen in that sequence. I just don't think. Well, I mean, I speak at conferences, okay, and we agree on a few things, but then we disagree on everything else. Yeah. So, and these are people that are studying the Bible, the scriptures and everything. And I just think we're at a point where it's starting to become clear, but we're not there where we can say something like, this is that which was prophesied. I look at things as there's a threshold, and everything, when it reaches a certain level, then we'll be able to say, this is that which was prophesied. And I'm not sure how we go about that. But I think we're getting close on some of these issues to say, yeah, that's it. That this really is it. It'll be interesting to watch how this unfolds.
It will. I think one of the hallmarks, and I guess we'll leave it here, is that deception, I think, and will be rampant. And Jesus told us, warned us about being deceived. And I just see so much of it, deception in all areas, particularly now in the conservative right. Christians being dragged into nationalism and all kinds of other things. I just think and there'll just be so many deceptions, and it's getting harder and harder to find people that haven't been caught up in one or other of them. Even as finding guests on the show and things, it's like the number of people is narrowing down that I feel even comfortable having. So
well, I'll know when you stop calling that you reach that level with me then.
Well, look, we can have, we can, you know, disagree on some things, but by and large, we're on the same track. So,
But you're 100% correct that the deception is operating on many levels that we go. And look, I have to guard, you know, I want to guard myself so I don't buy into it. So look, there are things, for example, Trump does that I like. And so I've told everybody for a while now, I'm transactional with him, just like we would have been transactional with Joe Biden. If Joe Biden had done anything that I approved of, then I would have said, yeah, I approve of what he did. And so there are things that Trump does that I like, and there's a lot that he does that I don't like. So you call him out on the what you don't like, and you support what you do like. That's politics. That's the way it is. But I'm just telling you, Tony, this Islamic thing that we're facing is enormous. And then they have these people everywhere that support them. You know, we talked about a couple of those people, one male, one female, that are out there. But, you know, then I'm looking at Tony, I don't understand how this ex-jihadist, supposedly ex-jihadist, guy comes into power in Syria and everybody's falling all over themselves to approve what he does. It doesn't make any sense.
No, unless there's a bigger agenda at play, which I think there is, but I think we'll leave it at that for today anyway.
Okay, so good thanks, talking to you again.
Yeah, thanks, John. Been good to see you again. And folks, don't forget to subscribe to us at aminutetomidnight.com and also on our YouTube channel. And remember that we do run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations. If you want to help, you can do that at our website, aminutetomidnight.com. Please like and share this video as well. God bless, God willing, we'll be back in a few days' time with another episode.